been 20 years since this man sat down in a chair every night and told America what had happened during the day. Now he probably spends more time behind the wheel of his ship, cruising around the world. His name is Walter Cronkite. Walter, good morning.
Good morning, Paul, and how are things out in my favorite country, St. Louis, Kansas City, and the rest of Missouri?
We are doing very well here. The weather has been absolutely beautiful, turning a little bit sticky here. Have you been doing a lot of sailing? How's the weather been in your part of the world?
Well, the weather's been okay, fine. It's cool here in Martha's Vineyard, this little island off the coast of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cool as it is for most of the summer. But I haven't been sailing. I've been fairly immobile with the Achilles tendon problem that had to replace my Achilles tendon. I'm not very mobile at the moment, but I will be soon again.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that you're going to be up and around again. I know that must be killing you to get to the summer season and not to be able to be out on your boat.
Well, it's terrible. Terrible.
Hey, I want to talk to you about TV news, of course, but before we get into that, I want to talk to you about a movie. My daughter has lately become enamored of the movie Apollo 13 ever since I got it on DVD. She's been watching it over and over again. And, of course, in addition to the remarkable story with Tom Hanks and Bill Paxton and Kevin Bacon and all the rest, your voice is fairly prominent there because America always turned to you for what was going on in the space program in the 60s. But in listening to it, I couldn't help but wonder if you had done some extra new recording for Ron Howard to make that movie.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Ron hoped to use material from the broadcast themselves during the Apollo 13 crisis, but it didn't turn out that he could get the stuff succinctly enough for the movie. So basically, the words were mine. He gave me the material that he wanted to get into a short version, and I ad-libbed most of it, to tell you the truth.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So they would tell you, here's the situation, Walter, and you would just sit down and say, okay, well, let me just do this as if I'm sitting there remembering it in front of me right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. And you must have been thrilled with the way the movie came out.
Oh, yes. I think Howard did a great job with it.
Do you still follow the space program?
Oh, yes, very closely. I talk to people at NASA every so often, being brought up to date. As a matter of fact, I've just finished a documentary with my son's documentary company. On JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, on robotic exploration of space. It'll probably be on PBS so sometime in the near future, I hope.
How do you think we're doing, the U.S. space program? Obviously, we don't have the excitement we did of 30-odd years ago when we were still talking about going to the moon. But how are we here in the year 2001?
Well, we're doing, I think, as well as the public will support. The problem is that interest fails a bit. Of course, in Congress, that's reflected with reduced budgets. There's a lot of excitement today, of course, about robotic flight, really getting deep into the universe and beyond, perhaps even. With these incredibly efficient robotic flights, with the ability to report back to us on Earth as to what they're finding out there. It's very exciting. Unfortunately, it hasn't grasped the public's imagination yet, as it should. Also, of course, we're participating in this International Space City up there with the Russians and several other nations, and then that is getting some publicity. We're making progress, and NASA is as busy as ever.
Yeah, but the only time anybody really pays attention is when now this guy, you know, Dennis Tito, paid $20 million to go up. People went, what? So a guy, 20? I didn't even know we had people in space, and we got a guy paying $20 million to go up there.
Yeah, you know, now the Russians have told us they intend to continue that program. They're going to sell more tickets up there.
Well, you know, I guess the days of taking a cheap ride as a journalist, which you always hoped to do, and I hoped maybe I would be young enough to do, I don't think either of us has a chance at it anymore.
Don't give up yet. You know, when Glenn was selected to go up to test the effect of geriatrics in space flight, I called him up that day that it was announced, and I said, hey, you know, if you're honest about that's why you're going up, and NASA's honest about it, then there's something unfair. I'm 3 years older than you are, Glenn. I ought to be going up.
Well, maybe they'll need more tests done.
I think so. They need somebody even older.
Well, you know, right now I'm putting my hopes in my daughter's arms. You know, maybe she'll get into the astronaut corps someday and carry on the family wishes and dreams. Who knows?
Well, if she's that interested in the Apollo 13 flight, maybe indeed that'll happen.
Maybe. Let's talk a little bit about television news. In a recent issue of American Journalism Review, you were rather critical of network news organizations. I'm quoting you here. You say they should be about news, not biographies of movie stars and true crime stories.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
The evening news broadcast on the traditional networks, the three networks, they've got approximately 24 minutes less the commercial time, lead ins and lead outs. We've got one of the most complicated nations in the world, this big country of ours with so many various interests, cultural interests as well as industrial interests, business interests, regional interests, and we are the leaders, supposedly, of the free world, this huge world of ours that has so many, many problems. All of this is news that directly affects how we are going to live and how certainly our children, your daughter, is going to be living. We need to know what's going on in our own country and around the world. In 24 minutes, you cannot deliver all the important news of that event almost any given day. Oh, there's some dull days, but basically there's always something of great importance somewhere around the world and in this country that we should be paying attention to. And when I was doing it, as well as now, that amount of time isn't even adequate to do a comprehensive job of reporting all the news that needs to be reported in a day. Now today, under the commercial pressures that they have, under the fact that all of these cable channels are out there taking off some of the audience to the point where today, the three traditional networks have less than 50% of the total audience. In my day, when we didn't have the cable competition, it was 98% we shared.
Mm-hmm.
Today, the conglomerate owners of the networks want to see results. They want profit out of their news departments. So they tell them to doll up their news, make it interesting, get more people in there. We've got to get, we, meaning each of the networks, they say to them, we've got to get a larger share of this audience. And in doing that, the poor news managers who know what they ought to be covering are forced to cover this stuff that they think will appeal to a greater audience. I think that's cheapening the news, and it's not giving the news to the people that they deserve. If our population is listening to television news, and this includes the cable news today, listening to television news and getting most of their news from television, as polls indicate they do, then they are not adequately informed to intelligently exercise their franchise in this democracy, and that's endangering the democracy.
Do you think that they are too much pandering to what Americans think they want to know rather than what they really should know?
I don't think there's any question about it. They have tried to step up the viewing audience with these feature approaches, your health and mine, your pocketbook and mine, all this sort of thing. That's good stuff to have on television, and they do it well, but not in the news program. The news program should be concentrating on news.
What do you think is being missed? What is that stuff that you would consider, I guess, fluff? What is it taking the place of? Give me a couple of examples.
Well, I'd say almost anything that's happening in Washington and the Congress, now that's considered dull stuff by most news organizations today. That's dull.
Mm-hmm.
People don't want to hear that. It's not what people want to hear. That's not the point. It's what people should hear. And the news organizations, the old-line newspapers and the properly approached television news programs should be giving people that which people need, not what they think they want. There's got to be a leadership potential there.
Of course, we're in an era now where we don't have war, we don't have huge domestic unrest, we're not in the middle of the civil rights era and war protests and that sort of thing. Americans, by and large, are happy. And, you know, you say you want to have more news out of Washington, but I think Americans have gotten sick of Washington and expressed a huge amount of disinterest in what's happening
Washington.
There.
It's not just Washington. It's Jefferson City. It's Springfield. It's St. Louis, town hall, city government, mm-hmm. your educational system, I suppose your streets are all perfect. I suppose your lighting is all perfect. I suppose your zoning is all perfect. If it's not, what about talking about it? How what you do about it?
Mm-hmm. Are half-hour evening newscasts even relevant in a world anymore with three 24-hour cable news channels?
Well, I don't know that they're relevant or not. It depends on how they perform.
But is it, I mean, for one guy to sit down in the middle of at a desk and say, okay, here are the things that are most important to us that we think we need to share with you?
I would hope so, Paul. There's a piece in the New York Times Magazine section this week that is horrifying about Fox Channel on cable,
mm-hmm.
Fox News. And they're dolling up the news on Fox to make it interesting, flashy visuals and short stories, and it points out that they're also the conservative network.
Mm-hmm.
But the dolling up of the news, the beautifying of news to make it appealing to people, is a dumbing down of the news. You know, it may be that we don't have an audience out there for news any longer, for the important things that are going on. If that's so, then I would hope this administration will go further than being sure that no child is left behind, but let's be sure that no adults are left behind. We've got to begin an educational program in this country so that people understand and have a thirst for the important stories of the day. Not just the fluff. They're not getting the news of the day, the important news of the day at all. I'm not talking about just Washington. There are stories all over this country that are dramatic incidents of success in meeting problems. Even more, unfortunately, dramatic stories of the lack of success, failures in meeting our problems.
Mm-hmm.
But these are things we should be thinking about, doing something about. Not sitting down to watch news to be entertained.
So let me just give you an example of a story here from a couple of weeks ago, the Robert Blake story, the death of his wife, the murder of his wife. That's a story that all the TV news, whether local, network, syndicated, primetime news magazines, all of them jumped on and ran with for several days. Do you think that that's a mistake?
Yes. I don't think the story was worth anything like the space they gave it at the time they gave it. It's an interesting story, but you can tell it once and maybe update an event here and there with a few words, but the emphasis they put on the story was entirely wrong.
Do you have a relationship with CBS News anymore? Can you pick up the phone and say to them, hey, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, I can do that.
And do you?
Occasionally I do.
What do they say?
That's what I was waiting for you to ask. They say, that's very interesting. Thank you.
That's it?
Yeah.
Really? Do they say, hey, look, we're making money with this, and as long as we're making money with it, that's what matters? By the way, when you...
They say, oh, Walter, you understand our problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I do understand their problem. Look, it's not the news departments that are at fault. It is the pressure put on by these conglomerate owners of the networks these days, who do not have the background of understanding as to their responsibility to the public in giving them the adequate information so that our democracy can function. They haven't learned that lesson. The old-timers, the guys who started the networks, the Paleys and Sarnoffs, Goldensons, they learned their responsibility at the feet of Congress, setting up the Federal Communications Commission in the old radio days, and they were told that, listen, if you're going to get these licenses, you've got to act responsibly and keep people informed. You've got to do proper news, public interest programming. And they learned that lesson so that they let the news departments operate as journalists knew that they should operate. Today, these conglomerates don't have that background, and they're putting the pressure on more profit, cut your budgets, don't you know, the three networks don't virtually, together, the three traditional networks have virtually no representatives overseas today. This is criminal.
Mm-hmm.
This is these are the days when a bonfire in a little country whose name we can't pronounce and whose location on the face of the globe we don't know, that bonfire can suddenly turn into a mushroom-shaped cloud. And we better damn well know what's going on. We don't. Here we are, leaders of the free world, supposedly, most powerful nation in the world, and we've got an electorate that has no appreciation of what their foreign policy might be, should be, could be at all. We are not competent to be leaders of the world.
When you were sitting behind that news desk for CBS in the 60s and 70s, was profit a part of it? Was the news profitable, or did you not even care?
No, the news was not profitable. It was a loss leader. The first program that became profitable was 60 Minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that began to change the face of network news as the managers looked at it. If the 60 Minutes could make money, couldn't maybe the evening news make money? But in my term in office as managing editor of CBS Evening News and the anchor person, we were never under that pressure.
Speaking of 60 Minutes, I had Don Hewitt on the show last month, and he has suggested pooling the resources of all three network news departments and just put on one big newscast every night. And don't worry about the profit motive. You'll save money by pooling everybody. What do you think of that idea?
Well, you're saying pooling, not fooling everybody.
Pooling with a P, yes.
Don's always been a forward thinker and very exciting in that regard. I would worry about it a little bit. I don't like monopolies in news. And while we have all the cable stations out there and cable networks, it wouldn't be a monopoly in that sense, and therefore perhaps it would be a safe enough thing to do. The only trouble is that you get whatever the managing group from the conglomerates is that put it together. One misstep by them, and the entire thing goes.
Yeah.
And I would think that's a little dangerous.
I'll share with you one thing about television news that drives me crazy, and it happens on a regular basis, is because they have the technology to go live anywhere, they do go live anywhere. And often you have some man or woman standing there with a microphone telling you what may or may not be going on behind them. Sometimes it's happened earlier in the day, and they're still there live for no reason. But often when there's a big event going on, they're more interested in going to their reporter live on the scene than letting that reporter be a reporter. Have you noticed a lack of reporting in television news lately?
Well, I think I know what you're talking about. Yes, there is that slippage, but... I don't know. I that's not a situation which worries me that much.
Are there any stories that you say to yourself, oh, man, I wish I could get out there and report that one myself?
All of them. it's tough to not be able to just command a plane and say, hey, I'm going to cover that one.
Get my trench coat. We're going on the road. Let's cover this one. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Although the anchors do that occasionally, and I often wonder, you know, when Brokaw or Jennings or Rather goes out, is that because they want to put their stamp of approval on this is how big this story is that I have to be here? Is it necessary for these guys to go on the road anymore?
I think it's a good thing for them to do. I think it establishes their repertorial abilities. It reminds people that they are working newsmen, not just sitting behind a desk. Reading copy, I think that's a good thing to do. I think it gets them closer to the problems of covering stories in the field and gives them, therefore, a better sense of how to deal with their reporters who are out there regularly.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good thing to do. It can be overdone, obviously, and it's there's an awful lot of copycatism there. That if one guy goes, the other two kind of feel they better get there. A little of that happens.
Walter, if you hear that there is a big story somewhere, whether it's one that you have an itch yourself to go out and cover or just one that you're interested in, what channel do you put on? What network would you put on first to see what was going on?
Of course.
No, come on. You're not still on the CBS payroll, are you?
I'm a, uh, I'm a drive my family or my wife whoever's watching with me crazy. I'm a channel hopper.
Are you?
I'm back and forth seeing what they're up to and what they're doing. Sometimes to my own expense, I don't really find out what the story's about. I just find out how it's being covered.
I'm glad to know that Walter Cronkite even does what the rest of us do. Hey, what does CBS have? What does ABC have? What does CNN have?
Sure.
What do they have over on MSNBC? Sure. What do they got over here?
Yeah.
And, of course, the Internet is also a phenomenal resource for that.
Of course, I miss the fact that I'm not in the newsroom where we've got nine monikers up there.
Yeah.
And you can constantly kind of get an idea what the others are doing.
Yeah. Is there one event from your life that still stands out as the preeminent news moment that you covered?
Oh golly, Paul! That's a difficult one. If you will recognize that it's not an unheard of question.
Mm-hmm.
I've had time to think of it before. It's hard to say because stories are of such different nature. They're the fast breaking stories, the unexpected ones. They're the stories that you plan and you do well. They're the stories that have been in the works for a long time, and you finally get the nugget that makes it all come to pass. They're those stories, those things that in the shop are very important and that are memorable, as opposed to the ones that the public would remember. Obviously, the big one with man's landing on the moon, as far as our progress goes, and one of the great scientific achievements of the 20th century. There's the assassination of Kennedy as the unexpected event. Of all times, they're the in my lifetime, which is kind of a long one now. There's World War II. You can hardly beat that for a story.
Mm-hmm.
That is being a correspondent, making bombing runs and submarine trips and landings on beaches and things. It's a lifetime experience of reporting.
Well, I wish you luck with getting that Achilles tendon back in shape so you can get back out on your boat. And when will the space program be on that you and your son have put together?
I don't know yet. It hasn't been scheduled by PBS. It'll be a PBS story, public broadcasting story.
Well, when it is, I hope we can get back together and talk some more.
Well, I hope so too, Paul, and give everybody my best.